This is Rocket Talk. My name is Justin Landon, and I am joined tonight by blogger Renee. Just Renee. She's like Pele, Ichiro, and Cher. She gets one name and one name only. She blogs at Lady Business, writes for Strange Horizon, and is editing the third volume of the Hugo-nominated speculative fiction series, Specfic 2015. Welcome, Renee.
Hey!
Thanks for being here tonight. Before we get started, though, I really need to know, how's Up Against It by MJ Locke coming?
It's actually coming pretty well. I've gotten halfway through. It's really, really good this time. I've gotten past the horrific parts in the first that threw me out the first time. So it's fine. I'm going to get through it this time. I feel your judgment.
This is a little bit of an inside joke, and I apologize. Renee and I have been going back and forth for quite some time about novels that we recommended one another, and I strongly suggest that she read Up Against It by MJ Locke. And we were going to do a podcast about it because Renee hosts the Lady Business Plus podcast, and we were going to do a podcast about Up Against It. We were really excited. Meanwhile, Renee says to me, Justin, you have got to read The Raven Boys by Maggie Stiefvater. And I did. And so one of us has upheld our end of the bargain thus far, and one of us has not. But I'm really encouraged to hear. It's like you were planning. You knew I was going to ask this.
Yes, I did. I read it this week, in fact.
That is very exciting. No, I hope someday we could do a podcast about it, because I love that book. Thanks to Liz Burke from Tor.com for turning me on to it. I didn't mention it in her intro, but Renee is here to talk with me tonight about her and the other women from Lady Business. Every year they do a survey of the blogs and the science fiction and fantasy community and take a look at, I guess you would say, gender parity in blog coverage, right?
Yeah, and reviews.
Right.
Of books.
So the three of them, Renee, Jody, and Anna, along with Anna Grillo of the Book Smugglers, who I understand does a little bit of help as well, have put together their series this year. It is up on Wednesday, the 11th of June, and which will probably have been a week by the time this comes out. But I wanted to have Renee on to talk about it a little bit, because I think this is a hugely important issue that we've been talking a lot about, but I don't know that we've had quite the opportunity to have a dialogue about it one-on-one here with Renee. So we're going to get some good information out of her about what's been going on in the blog scene. So before we get too deep into this, I kind of just want to know, like, what made you decide to want to take up this project, which is rather extensive?
Well, back in 2011, me and my partner, and we wanted to read books by women. And he is really a picky reader. He doesn't like a lot of different stuff. So basically what I did was go to science fiction and fantasy blogs to find books by women. I followed like 200 blogs at that time just to get recommendations. And I read through their back reviews, and I kept up with them, writing books down, and I started to notice that women were repeating, the same women, the same books were repeating, and there were less of them, and the men's list was just getting longer and longer with like new voices. So I was like, that's interesting. I wonder if that's actually a thing. Like, I wonder how good the community is about reviewing women writers on their blogs, considering that most of the blogs at the time that I was following were getting review copy. So I basically lost my mind and decided to survey like 20, 25 blogs, I think it was. I would have done more, actually. The only reason my sample is so small is because I got so depressed. The first year was very depressing, because definitely men were reviewing lots of men and no women, and women were reviewing women more regularly, but there was not that many women book bloggers back then, because it was, you know, really early. Right. So I just found that it was extremely one-sided on reviews of women writers.
And so one of the challenges in this, I would guess, is identifying blogs from the community that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously the blogosphere, as we call it in the biz, is huge, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you've got sort of the YA blogs groups, you've got the romance blog groups, you've got the paranormal romance blog groups, and then you've got kind of like, I guess, core science fiction and fantasy. I mean, it's, you've got all these different blogs, and like, you, to really accomplish this survey, I guess you've kind of had to figure out who fits where, or are you surveying just sort of everybody?
Well, the first year we used snowball sampling, which was basically I went to like the blogs I knew, which at the time on some of them, SF Signal, Fantasy Book Critic. There was, I think Grasping for the Wind was still open at that time. So they had blog rolls. So I would just go to these big blogs. I put them on a list and I would go to their blog rolls and go through their people who they were linking to and add them to the list. So that's how we got our first year's sample. And then from that list, I pulled 25 out. The next year we did it, we actually changed it because to do a wider survey. Like, we used the Grasping for the Wind SF blog list. Then we used Google searches to like round out the list to help assess self-selection bias. So we changed the sampling style from the first year to the second year to make it more of a more robust study. So that first year was just really weird because we just used blog rolls mostly.
And now this year in 2014, you've used more of a random sample?
Mm-hmm, like last year. Yeah, this year we used the same randomization as last year. We pulled together a master list of SF blogs that we've collected over the years. We did robust search engine work. Then we did like a survey where we asked people to submit blogs that was open for like 6 months. And then that created a list of 133 blogs from which we pulled two sets of numbers, 25 numbers each. And then we used the first set of 25 numbers. And if there was like a problem with the blog, like technical issues, it was closed before we started compiling. We just pulled a second number from the second list of 25 numbers. And that's how we ended up with the random sample.
Yes, this sounds dangerously like math.
it's a lot of numbers, and I'm not great with numbers. Like, I mean, I barely passed college algebra, so it's been an adventure in learning how to like process spreadsheets and learn charts. This is what I have Anna for. That's her job.
Yeah. Apropos of nothing, I dodged any sort of math in college by taking a class called The Age of Dinosaurs, which satisfied a math requirement due to one carbon dating question on the final. So, yeah, I'm with you.
God, that sucks. I hate you for that. Why did I have to suffer? Why couldn't my college have that?
I was master at manipulating the course catalog. Anyway, so, and I guess what I'm trying to get at here a little bit is there has to be some granularity of the community, because obviously you're not intending to capture blogs that are reading, and when you're talking about gender parity, you're not trying to capture blogs that are reviewing primarily paranormal romance, because you're going to get a huge percentage of women being reviewed because it's written predominantly by women. And so when you're talking about science fiction blogs, you are talking about a very particular kind of blog, right?
Well, the whole, my methodology is science fiction and fantasy material. So I actually have paranormal romance blogs on my list. It's because it's less about looking at individuals and more like looking at patterns. So if you have a paranormal romance blog on the list and they're reviewing mostly women, you can look and say, well, like, what's the genre, and what's different? Like, why is that genre dominated by women? And what is that saying that these women have found all these books to read, but they're not being read by men? I mean, there was a lot of commentary last year about how men don't read paranormal romance, which is essentialist nonsense, because I know plenty of men who read paranormal romance.
Sure.
So it's like, our whole project was meant to ask questions, like, look at the data, look what we found, and because we're not trying to answer anything, because I don't think anything can be answered. It's more like looking at things and seeing why the way they are.
Yeah, and I think as somebody who, you know, when you began this project back in, I guess you ran it for the first time in 2012, but that was from material from 2011.
Yes.
My first foray into the blogging scene was in 2011 when I started blogging. And, you know, if you look at what I was writing and reviewing back then, it was probably, God, I actually don't want to even know, but I would guess it's probably 80 to 90% male. And through surveys like yours, and I think that's the probably the most important part of the survey isn't so much the questions that it answers, although, or even the questions that it asks, although those are interesting to sort of water cooler and try to guess at why and how. But it's just the fact that it points out, pulls back the cover of our own bias, right? I mean, obviously, like, seeing your data makes me look at my own patterns and ask questions of myself, which I guess is the intent.
Which was one of the goals, yeah. Mostly I was interested in starting a conversation about the intersectionality of how review blogs and the publishing industry were working together. Because if you're a reviewer and you're getting review copy and your final gender parity for a year is like 80-20, but you're going back and you're looking at it and looking at your review copy, the publishers have sent you all these books about men and very few books about women. So it's not just your biases that work there. It's also the publisher's bias.
Well, and as somebody who has received, God, I don't even want to guess how many review copies so far this year. I'm going to guess it's probably in excess of 200. I would, and I haven't sampled, I mean, I haven't really paid attention, but I would guess I get probably 65% men, and I would guess, or maybe a little higher than that. Although what I've started doing, and it's actually been very effective, is I've actually specifically told publicists that I'm not interested in books by men. And that's helped quite a bit, actually, because the publicist will send it if they know I'm likely to read it. But I think publicists, I think sometimes we don't give them enough credit. Sometimes I think we make this assumption that they just sort of send books out into the ether without any sort of tracking or thought about who they're sending them to.
Well, some of them do, because I've gotten really weird books recently. Like, I got this really weird fantasy YA novel by this author I've never heard of. I'm like, what? Why would you send me this? This makes no sense.
I do get some of those as well. I love it when I get, like, the Harry Turtledove book, and I have never read Harry Turtledove. You know, like, he's a very specific kind of market, and, like, I'm always confused by why I get them. But for the most part, I do think at least the good ones do curate a little bit about what they send. And so, I mean, if you look at sort of my profile based on the fact that I'm a man, that my blog covers a lot of epic fantasy and sort of space opera, maybe then there's the assumption that I'm more likely to review a book by a man than a woman, I guess, or something like that. It's a false assumption, but by asking specifically for books by women, I've had quite a good response of getting more women sent to me this year. And I guess that's a good thing that I'm asking the question, although it's sort of frustrating that I have to ask it.
so that was one of the points, was you can be aware of your own bias, but if you're not also aware of everybody else's bias around you, you can really buy into the, like, this cultural push to just review like the next big thing by a dude. And when I was doing the project with my partner where we were reading only women, it was actually more like we had to read 5 books by a woman to read 1 book by a man. And that's how it was like 5 and 1, and then we could go 5 again and then 1. And it was really hard too, because if you're in the community, these books are just in your, like, they feel in your face. And this was a couple of years ago. It's changed drastically. I mean, a really great example is in Slurry Justice or, the upcoming The Mirror Empire by Cameron Hurley, where they have like a lot of push. But like back when I started the project, it felt like there was just this surround sound of people talking about books by men.
So this is a really good question, right? So The Mirror Empire, Ancillary Justice, I would argue The Goblin Emperor by Catherine Addison is probably also in that category. Those books have generated a lot of buzz. But if you really put it to me and said, Justin, are those books being generated by buzz from the community or from the publisher? I don't know. My gut tells me it's more from the community than from the publisher. I mean, as somebody who's on the review copy end, and I'm looking at books like Brian Staveley's The Emperor's Blades and anything by Brandon Sanderson, you know, a Brent Weeks novel or something like that, that is getting, you know, these huge pushouts with advertising all over the place. And I didn't see that with Ancillary Justice. I mean, to me, that's just a book that built on really, really strong word of mouth in a blogging community that was hungry for that kind of book, as opposed to the publisher shoving it down our throats.
That's true.
At least that's how it felt to me. I mean, I mean, who knows?
I don't read a lot of dude-written epic fantasy, period, because I'm really bad at fantasy novels. I'm terrible at them. So I mean, publishers can do it, but when it's your peers doing it, like pushing really hard on books about men, which the community did. I mean, the community I was following, because I, even after the project ended, I kept following all the blogs that I used, which was a bad decision because there's just so much. It's like, it's just noise. 2 years ago, the blogs that were doing, that I was following, that were doing review copy were definitely talking about men more. And that, I mean, that's just my experience. I think it's not, I'm not claiming that that's everybody's experience, but for me, the blogs I was following, the way I was reading them, their coverage was about men in the majority. And the only reason that was cut is because I was following a lot of women who were reviewing more women. Because, as we know, women will read books by women and men, but men often won't turn around and read books by women. And that's just something that our data has proved over and over. Without, like, they have to, like, look, they have to stop and, like, say, okay, I have this inequality here and I got to fix it. And unless they ask, like, unless they ask the question and then look at their reading and reviewing and fix it, generally they're going to continue to, like, their reading lists are going to continue to be dominated by men.
As you've gone through all these various blogs over the last couple of years, have you discovered any female authored blogs that are reviewing men at a significantly higher rate than women? There must be some.
There's some outliers. This year, our data was, our thesis is that basically women will review women and men more equally, and men will review men in a higher rate than women. And that's been our thesis. It stood up last year and the year before. This year, it did not, actually. That's just because I think of some of our methodology. Like, for example, with anthologies, we don't use the editor. We use the author list. We count by author, not editor. So if somebody is picking up an anthology and the editor of the anthology has given no thought to gender parity of the anthology, that's going to hurt their overall score. So this year we had a lot of that, I think.
Well, and we've had some high-profile anthologies. In fact, I was just going through Rogues, which is the new George R.R. Martin and Gardner Dozois anthology. And there were lots of high-profile female authors in that anthology, but I think it's like 60-40 men when I was looking at it. And I think that's, I don't know, but that seems like that may be fairly common for the...
Yeah, I don't have like the solid anthology numbers, but like we include our data when we post everything, like the spreadsheet that we use and the way that we counted, so people can actually go and like replicate and see if they get the same result. Nobody's ever done that. I'm not at. Just, I guess they look at it and go, no, you people are crazy. Forget it.
Well, as somebody who you asked to help you guys through this process a little bit, I took one look at that spreadsheet and helping you guys calculate, you know, which book was written by a man or which one was written by a woman. And I took one look at that spreadsheet and I was like, yeah.
You tapped out. It didn't take you a long time at all. You were like, nope.
That looks like a lot of work. So let me just say, it's a great deal of work. So the fact that Lady Business has taken this on and done it 3 consecutive years, although it appears y'all are going to pass the torch on to maybe somebody else that wants to take this up in future years. But the fact that you guys put 3 years on this is really important to the community, and you should be applauded for it, because I think that it's the kind of work that really inspired me to change my patterns, and I'm hopeful that it has done that for a lot of others as well. It's going to take a long time for it to be reflected in the data, probably, because you're going to have to penetrate so far to get that random sample to back up the individuals that are changing. I hope it's made a difference. I think it's certainly made people more aware of their biases across the community. I mean, you see folks like Dribble of Ink, SF Signal, and others that have made an active effort, I think, to bring more women into the fold. SF Signal in particular seems to have made great strides on that front.
Actually, the last year I wrote an essay because Aiden from Dribble of Ink posted about his plans to try for better parity in his reading. And the first comment, and I'm picking on him, he's going to get so upset at me, from Stefan from Far Beyond Reality. What, like, he was just a total denier. And I'm like, look, I'm like, this guy, and like, I linked to him and everything. And it was like, I sort of dropped the internet on his head. I feel kind of bad about that now. But he has totally turned, like, he did like a complete 180. He's definitely like on board with putting women's voices center now. So I have like a direct example of of that it's possible, and you can still read books about dudes, and it's not about quotas, and just you can just look at it far beyond reality and get that perfect example.
There's another blogger who put a top 10 list up last year of, you know, his books that he'd read thus far that year, and I tweeted at him and I said, wow, that's all dudes. And his initial response was, come on, man, it's just coincidence. You know, it's just the 10 books I like so far. And the end result was he took a look at it and he said, yeah, you know what? I've read like 50 books this year and like 46 of them were by men. That's probably a problem. And I think once everybody's initial reaction, I know mine always, my first reaction was certainly like, come on, I don't pay attention to authors yet.
Yeah, it's defensive. Everybody gets defensive. Pretty much every man I've talked to about this subject gets super defensive and or angry.
Because nobody wants to think they're being sexist, right? Like, we just want to think that it's all about the art, bro.
Yeah, but it's not sexist in the way. I don't think it's sexist in the way that you mean. I think it's just a blind spot.
Right.
It's just a culture thing.
And some of it is, I think you make a good point. Some of it has to do with availability, especially for bloggers, I think, who I know I've fallen into the trap at various points in my blogging career where it's like, if you don't send it to me, I'm not going to read it. You know, I get to the point where there's so much coming in that the idea of actually actively seeking out something to read is sort of makes my head hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Because
And then you also have the fact that, like, some bloggers don't have a lot of money. Like, a lot of us are doing this for free. So we are using review copies specifically to be able to participate in this process. Like me, I didn't, like, when I started book blogging, I didn't have enough money. I didn't have enough money to, like, go out and buy new books. So if I was, like, actually getting review copy, I probably would be in the same boat because, like, I can't afford to, like, go out and buy a bunch of books by women. So it's definitely about availability too.
Although, with that in mind, it just falls into it's easy to just read what people send you. And it's also the lack of bloggers actively seeking things out. I mean, that's the lesson I learned, is that just by saying to a publicist or to an author, hey, I would like to read your book for the purposes of reviewing it.
That's the worst. It's the worst.
No, especially in this situation though. I mean, especially when it comes to you're trying to read new voices, specifically new voices that are not the default. You can't just wait for it to show up on your doorstep, I don't think, as a blogger. I think you have to actively go. It's just like, it's the same debate that we've been having with editors of publishing houses. If you'll remember, I don't want to say her name in case I get it wrong, but it was an editor in the UK who wrote a post about how we're not publishing women because we don't get women submissions. And it's sort of the same thing, which is, well, me as a blogger, by saying, well, I'm not reviewing women because nobody sends them to me, is saying that it's somebody else's fault about my reading habits. Just as when that UK editor said, we're not buying more women because we're not getting sent more women, came off as though she was blaming women for not submitting.
Yeah, publishers have to create an environment in which it's safe. It's like, it's safe for women to submit. It's safe for people like me, as a woman review. Like, I get really nervous about just asking for stuff that's free in quotes, because you're reviewing it. But like, that really, like, it makes me feel weird. Obviously, that's something that that some bloggers go through. Like, you don't feel entitled to it. That's where I'm coming from. But so yeah, that's really hard to overcome that, because I never know how, like, if I email a publicist, I don't really know how they're going to react for me asking for a book that I'm not going to pay for just to review it. I never know how it's going to go over. So part of it is also creating an environment where bloggers of all kinds, because I get rejected a lot because we're a media blog. We do books and movies and TV. We do a lot of different things. And I get rejected a lot on NetGalley because I don't think our blog fits, like, the profile of a book blog. But, like, for example, Ellen Wright from Orbit has gone, like, out of her way to, like, make me feel perfectly safe and welcome to ask for a review copy. So that's kind of, like, she emailed me personally, we talked about it, and that's kind of what I mean. And it's because it's kind of opaque about how you even find people to ask.
Oh yeah.
Does that make sense?
Oh yeah, I get DMs every day. You know, like, who's the publicist for so and so? What's their email address? How do I find them?
And so yeah, clearly I should have been bothering you this whole time.
But I think that's sort of incumbent on the blogging community to help itself, you know, to say that we as a whole want to cover a diverse spectrum of fiction that reflects the diverse spectrum of readers that are out there looking for things to read. Because I think that's the end of the day, we don't want blogs that are serving a narrow segment of the reading public. And this actually gets back early on. You talked about how the fact there's this assumption that all PNR readers, that's paranormal romance readers, are women. And that's not true. There are lots of men that read paranormal romance. We just don't talk about them as much. And I think obviously the same is true of epic fantasy, right? In fact, I would venture a not so big guess that more women read epic fantasy than men, because women read more than men generally. And so this notion that all these blogs that are covering epic fantasy, mostly by men, it just gets back to this whole idea that, like, these blogs catering to specific audiences, if you put all these blogs together, we should have a diverse picture of the field. And as your survey over the last few years has shown, like, I don't know that we're really getting that yet.
No, not yet. We're making strides, but we haven't gotten there. Like, I would be really interested if somebody did this again in like 5 years to see how it would change.
And part of it is probably a result of the older blogs dying off.
Yeah, that was a lot. That was a big problem that I had. I know that the community has changed so drastically. When I started the project, the community was certain people. It was pretty established, because, I mean, I came into the SF community in 2009-ish as like a lurker. So between then and now, it's so vastly different. Some of those, like, what I would consider anchor blogs, they've closed. The people who ran them moved on.
Sure. Grasping for the Wind, Pat's Fantasy Hot List is greatly reduced. I mean, he doesn't do nearly as much as he used to. Graham's Fantasy Book Blog, or Graham's Book Blog, is largely gone. Walker of Worlds, Speculative Horizons.
A lot of the blogs that we covered, actually, we compiled a bunch of blogs, and then they closed after we compiled them.
Wow.
It was very heartbreaking. And I also think that the fact that the community has changed so much and it's really gotten a lot bigger, it means that the study that we're doing with the methodology that we're using, it's not so much an accurate reflection anymore. Like, really, to make it more accurate, we need to change the inclusion rules, because they're pretty narrow right now, and also expand it beyond 25. So there's a benefit to smaller surveys, but I also think that at this point, we're not going to get really like a super accurate survey without expanding it a lot more.
Well, I also have to think the blog as a medium, while still relevant, is changing.
I mean, yeah.
We're seeing more podcasts. We're seeing more blogs that are bigger, right? So like Tor.com and SF Signal and IO9 and Boing Boing. And a lot of these blogs are sort of like pushing out the mom and pop blog to some degree. Like, a lot of the best writers that used to have very active blogs of their own are now putting a lot more content onto these, frankly, paying venues. And so I wonder, as we look at this moving forward, how the, you know, the quote unquote jumbo blogs and podcasting have sort of diffused the blogosphere to some degree.
And then also different platforms, because I'm on Tumblr. Like, Tumblr is one of my communities, because I was obviously in media fandom, and media fandom was on LiveJournal, and then LiveJournal like crashed and burned. So fandom has like in mass moved to Tumblr, and Tumblr has a extremely different type of culture. It's got a book culture. It's hard to find, because Tumblr's not really friendly to authors, I guess. So it's difficult to find, but they're there, and they think the virality of Tumblr can't be overstated. Like, the reach of SF Signal has nothing on the reach of like a Tumblr post that gets picked up by somebody popular. So I think that that's also changed how blogging personalities develop. Like, there's so much noise that it's hard to find people that you respect and like their views on books these days.
Yeah, I think that's just sort of changed a little bit. Just the nature of the blog. It used to be this very personal enterprise and has become, there's a lot more things between you and that blogger. Like on Tumblr, something catches fire and you could be 2,000 notes away from that person. When you pick up on it. And Tor.com is a great example of, I'm not sure how much Tor.com's readers connect with the writer, you know, or how much of it is just associated with Tor.com, the entity.
That's a good question. I mean, for me, I don't really read. I read Tor.com, but.
It's okay. It's okay, Renee.
It's fine. Fine. I read Tor.com for specific people, but I think I'm an outlier because I'm in fandom for specific voices. I'm in fandom for specific fan voices, like Liz Burke. I read her article on Tor.com, and that's pretty much the only one I read regularly. Everybody else, I just check in whenever I have time. So I think, but I think, I'm, like I said, I think I'm just weird.
Sick burn, Justin. I only read you semi-regularly.
No, podcasts are not reading. Post more on your blog, sir.
And I wouldn't expect you to read the copious Joe Abercrombie reread.
Do you want me to be emotionally destroyed? No, thank you.
Yeah, no, I think you probably are an outlier in that regard, in that you had relationships with most of these writers before they wrote for Tor.com, and so you sort of followed them there as opposed to...
I remember when Tor.com started, like when it first established itself as a place in the community. For an example.
Right.
So seeing it get really big is great because they're really great paying venue, and I'm happy that they're paying their writers, which is important. But it's just really strange to me that it's developed the way it has. So yeah.
Yeah, it's huge. And so are, you know, some of the other venues like Strange Horizons. It's just interesting to me how the group blogs, and as you've gone through your methodology, obviously group blogs you treat you do you have you put any paid venue blogs into the survey, or are they excluded, or were they just not selected?
I don't know, like, because I can't tell when something's paid. Like SF Signal, for example, which is not in my sample this year. I think it was in May last year or the first year. I don't think that SF Signal is paid, like quotes.
It's not.
But there's money there. Like, there's got to be some kind of finance stuff going on with that blog. Otherwise, I don't think Don DiNardo could keep it, unless he's, like, independently wealthy. That's a huge undertaking.
Right.
And where do you draw the line, right?
Well, and so you look at, you know, even A Dribble of Ink now is selling ads.
Yeah, so
you know,
I really wanted him in my sample, and it didn't happen. It's really sad. Like all these blogs that I wanted to put, like, because I just do it randomly, right? So I don't fix the results. I just pull the numbers. So it was really heartbreaking that I got all these blogs I didn't recognize, and I'm just like, could not have had like one or two of the people that have changed, because that would have helped.
I believe I have dodged your sample all 3 years.
Have you?
I think so. You've never picked me, which is fantastic.
That's heartbreaking.
Save me the embarrassment of being called on the carpet for my actual numbers.
Yeah, but I also don't want to get into like a pointy finger of blame with the blogs that I did include, because it's not about it's not about individual results. It's not about individual reading over a year. It's just about like it's the whole picture, all the numbers put together of reviews for just one.
Well, and there's another like really interesting thing here at play. And so you guys are looking at reviews, and I actually think in the modern blogging atmosphere, reviews are actually just a segment of coverage on a blog.
You're absolutely right. This year I had a lot of trouble with that because we kept debating. We were like, okay, this is not a review. It's like, it's a cover post about the cover, but the person talks about the book. It's not a review, but they're talking about the book because they're just talking about the art on the book, but they're also talking about the book. So is that a review because they've read it? But does that count as a review if they're only talking about the book in the context of the art? It was horrible.
Or the looking forward to posts.
Yes, that too.
The buzz post. I mean, so if you look at this project from how are blogs evangelizing fiction, and are we evangelizing fiction equally of men and women authors, the review is part of that, but the evangelizing is both like what we're tweeting about and what we're Facebooking about and what we're doing art commentary on, who we're interviewing, well, whose books we're giving away, because that's, for example, a great indication of who the publisher is supporting, right, is who they're giving yep. books away for. It'd be fascinating to see that whole picture pulled in. I mean, it would be impossible for three or four women to possibly pull together all that data.
I'll do it if somebody wants to pay me.
Amen. I would actually love to see, and I hate to make work for my good friends at the Science Fiction Writers of America, but a CIFWA grant to do this work would be really tremendous.
It's not a joke about how much work this is. I mean, because I did it the first 2 years using Google Reader, which made it a lot easier because Feedly is the worst for browsing through archives. It stops. It'll cut you off. Unless you get a pro account, which no, thank you. So basically this year I actually had to manually go to every single post on a blog. I had to manually go to every single, and sometimes the review isn't clear on the genre. So you have to go and you have to research and figure out like, okay, cause we have these really, looking back now, super dumb rules about including fantastical horror, but not like psychological horror. Dumb. Why did I do that? That was the stupidest decision I could have made.
And there's also sort of the question of like, does it even matter what genre it is? At the end of the day, we're looking at the blogs, right?
Yeah. So it was just a lot of really like intensive, and like, cause you have to look at the tags, and sometimes you have to do like Amazon and Goodreads research to figure out what genre it's sitting in. It was just a lot of work, and I'm really glad it's over, and I'm really glad I'm not doing it again. It was useful at the time, but I'm really glad this is the last year.
And then there's like that horrible self-published novel with like a gender neutral name and you can't find any information about that person.
Yeah, that's also a good point. This is a really binary project. It's about men and women, and people who are non-binary get left out. Actually, an author, Poland Blake, I think, made a really great post about being in the community and being a non-binary person. And that post, when I read it, I was like, wow, like this project it's past its usefulness, because the comedian is actually now like Alex Dally McFarland writing her articles on Tor.com. We've passed the point where discussions about binary gender is as useful, because the community itself has actually started to be more intersectional about the spectrum of gender. So it's lost its usefulness.
Although, I mean, you're totally right, except the challenge that I think we have is that we have this, quote, community, and by, quote, community, we mean this rather small online community that's developed and has been very much more aware, much more intersectional. But I think the challenge that we face is that community is still relatively small. And when you look outside of that community into mainstream fandom that we're seeing at conventions, or people who aren't really in fandom at all, but dip into the fiction from time to time, or jump into conversations from time to time, are still having those 101 conversations. And it's actually, this happens all the time. I'll be on Twitter and I'll see one of these great voices out there that's talking about some of these issues, and they're tweeting about things, and I'm like, oh no, not again for the 50th time this week. You know, like I don't know if I can go through another 12 tweets on this subject today. But then you realize it's like that those conversations are still happen, and they still need to happen, because a lot of people are still back at step one. And
yeah,
so
this is why I'm glad my project only focuses on our community specifically.
Right.
If it was any wider, I would croak.
Yeah, and I guess these conversations have been what has allowed our community to come as far as it has. And obviously, there's still a long way to go, but I'll be very interested to seeing how over the next, God, I'm so old, like decade, this all plays out and how it pushes out into the wider community. Because we're still seeing, you know, when Nora Jemison does a keynote speech at a convention, and how the reactions are still very varied to those kinds of things.
Well, also it's normalizing it. So if this project was only for our community, and mostly it was, I didn't mean it to apply to any other community. It was specific to ours. If we look at what we're doing, what we're reading, what we're reviewing, and then we decide that we want to include more diverse voices, just by doing that, reading a book by a Black woman or reading a book by a gay man or reading a book, by somebody who is genderqueer and then reviewing it, it normalizes it. Like, it's going to become a thing where we hopefully one day where it just won't matter. And we won't have to constantly go back to this whole, the gender of the author doesn't matter, the work should stand on its own. Well, that's great. And every time somebody says this to me, I want to give them a copy of How to Suppress Women's Writing, because it just doesn't work like that. I wish it did, like it'd be great, but it just doesn't. So it's just about normalizing it, reviewing different people who aren't, you know, cisgender, straight, white people.
The comment was made when this year's Nebula Award winners were announced, who... on the fiction categories were all women this year. And there was sort of this response of, wow, how great is that? That, you know, we have all women winners. And then somebody tweeted and said, call me when that's not a big deal.
Right. It's really exciting and I'm super happy because some of those people on those ballots were fantastic. I haven't read everybody, but the people I've read were great. So I really hope that we get to a point where, number one, it's not news. And also, like, the radical right wing of SF fandom that apparently exists doesn't have a meltdown if it happens. Like, it's just something that will happen. I like how it's okay when it's just solid dudes. That's normal. But if it's solid women, something's wrong. So I'm ready for that not to be an issue. Like, once that radical right part stops freaking out, I'm going to like, well, we've arrived.
I feel like that wing is sort of it's like the death rattle right now. Like, it's very noisy and very demonstrative because it's fading away. You know, hopefully we're seeing a lot of that mentality taking a hike, which is strange to me because admittedly, you know, 5 years ago, I probably would have been closer to those voices than the ones that I'm associating myself with today. And that's just been through an education process that I think a lot of people need. I'm particularly pleased, and I said this when I had Liz Burke on a show, I don't know what podcast I was on, maybe it was Skiffy and Fanty, and I thanked Liz for being one of the people who called me out for my own biases, and I mean, hell, just the other day, Foz Meadows gave me a talking to on my own blog for...
I read that, that was great.
I don't know that I enjoyed it, but I was...
No, it's more like we can do that now, and it's not a thing. If that makes sense, right? Where two people can come together and they can disagree and somebody can point out, well, maybe your perspective isn't as wide as it could be. Look at it from this way, and everybody learns something and nobody has a fight. And it's not like the internet explodes for a week and a half. Like, I like that we're at that point.
Yes. I mean, God, how often is it that somebody gets called out like that and it doesn't get linked anywhere.
Not like, you're really lucky that SFNM doesn't have like anon memes.
Yeah, yeah. But no, I thought that was a great example of sort of how things are changing. For those that have no idea what I'm talking about, I wrote a review of Trudy Canavan's new book, and they made some comments about how it could have done some things better and cited a piece of writing advice that Chuck Wendig had espoused at some point. And the tone that I used to write it sort of indicated that I felt like Canavan should be some kind of disciple to Wendig, which is sort of bizarre considering Trudy Canavan is immensely successful. And so Foz pointed out my tone or verbiage, and she was totally right. It was not my intent, but that doesn't really matter, does it?
Yeah, part of the problem with a lot of the reaction, and I don't know how the reaction to the release of this year's data is going to go. Every year it seems to be different, and last year it was particularly bad. People were really mad. It's okay to be wrong. And I think a lot of what gets lost in these conversations is that it's totally okay to be wrong. Unless you're going, oh, I'm wrong. Well, fuck you. You know, which is sometimes a reaction. But if you're like, oh, I'm wrong. Okay, let me think about it and then fix it. But a lot of the times this conversation gets kind of derailed. Because being wrong is so terrifying on the internet. Because if you're wrong, the internet falls on your head. And it's really hard to recover because you're just like, you just want to like hide under something. And I've been there. I was there last year and it was awful. And it's getting to the point where you're like, okay, so I was wrong about this. It's all right. It's okay to be wrong. Let's fix it. But that's a really hard place to get to for some people.
Yeah, and that's what I don't understand, because I don't personally really face that challenge. I mean, usually, like, maybe it's just because I've accepted that I've been wrong for most of my life.
You're always wrong.
Yeah,
always.
I mean, as Liz Burke says, Justin Landon is wrong on the internet again, which is fine. But just that most 95% of our gender, race fail, whatever fail situations that we've had over the last 5 years, 95% of them could be solved or hedged by the offender just saying, boy, I really screwed that up. My bad, I'll do better next time at the beginning. And for the most part, like, that's the right reaction. I mean, I'm reminded of when Peter Brett made some remarks last year on Twitter and he got called out for it and he did a great job.
I remember that. I was really impressed with him. Yeah. I don't know who he is. I have no clue who that is, but good job, dude.
He just said, you know, my bad. And come on, Renee, New York Times bestseller. Keep up.
I don't know who that is. I'm sorry. I'll go look it up.
But he handled it really well. And I think just that willingness to say, you know, I'm wrong. And, or I said, I could have said that a hell of a lot better. Here's what I meant, but that doesn't take away the fact that I screwed up and we'll do better next time. And I hope that the data that you guys came out with and obviously the data once again shows that blogs are generally covering men more and men are covering men way more and women are covering men more, although not as badly as
women are generally a little bit better. But like I said, I think some of it is showing up in just the inclusion rules that I used specifically. So if you're not paying attention to every aspect of your reading, you're going to end up with bad parody, because some anthology editors just don't care about parody. So if you're picking up an anthology and it's got two women and 17 men and your score is otherwise really good, that's going to drag it like into the dumps. Like your parody is going to, your ratio is going to be messed up. And that's exactly what happened.
In years past, did you have a better percentage of women reviewing women than this year?
Yeah, actually. This year is actually worse.
Has it been about 50-50 in those past years, or was it...
I'm not actually sure. I'd have to actually go look at the numbers. But it's never been exactly equal. Because since it's a whole picture thing, some people who are... So you get some reviewers who generally... Like, I'm thinking about Kristen from Fantasy Book Cafe, who generally reviews a ton of women and not very many men, or Calico Reaction, who used to review books, who's since closed her blog, did a lot of the number of women that she was reviewing was just like astronomical. So it's because those are such like outliers, they kind of change the numbers.
Yeah, Liz Burke's the same way. She, I think she's probably, I don't know, I love guessing numbers, she's probably 80%.
I kind of wish now I had put her in my sample.
Well, this is sort of like the thing, right? I actually think as we look at this moving forward, and I really do hope somebody picks this up, whether an organization provides a grant or not, that would be amazing. I'm going to evangelize for that. But anyway, the fact that, you know, random sample has its uses, you know, mm-hmm. in that it provides perhaps an unbiased view of the field. But there's also something to be said for just picking the 25 most highly trafficked sites and looking at those and saying, these are the sites that people are reading. How are those doing? Because they're the ones that are setting the tone for the wider community, perhaps.
Also useful. And since we're ending a project and we're not going to do it anymore, I was talking to somebody and now I can't remember who. So sorry, person I'm not crediting. They were like, well, can't you encourage, maybe it was you actually, can't you encourage people to at the end of the year to look at their review stats and post the results as part like of a community-wide effort to examine biases in reviewing. And I'm like, well, that's not like, in theory, that sounds great, but getting people to be open about the fact that they'll probably do really badly and it'll be embarrassing is another story altogether. I would really like to see that happen. I mean, I do that and Anna does that on her blog, thingsmeanalot.com, but like, we already know that we're gonna, I guess, it's not a pass or fail, but we're gonna do really well. Like, our parody is gonna be fine. We're gonna cover more women just because we read more women. But getting like a regular blog who accepts review copy and considers himself like a tastemaker, that's a different story and it might be more difficult. Although I'd love to see it happen.
Yeah, I actually did that one year.
Are you going to do it this year? Because I'm going to hold you to it. I'll be like, Justin, it's December. Guess what time it is?
Yeah, I really meant to do it for 2013, but I think I forgot. In 2012, I did it, and I'm actually looking for it right now. So in 2012, I read 100 books. 75 were published in 2012. 25 were written by female authors. Yeah, so 25% in 2012. Which I was actually not that upset about at the time. I was like, 25%, all right.
Actually, considering some ratios I've seen, if you go look at some of the numbers for the individual blogs in this year's stats, some of the numbers in this, the individual numbers, make me furious. I'm like, how can you be this bad at reading women?
And that was the first year that I received review copies. And that was done just based on what I was sent and what I chose to read based on what I was sent. That was without actually making any sort of effort. And so I should probably run my 2013 numbers. It's relatively easy to do. Maybe I will do that after this podcast. And I will do it in 2014. I commit to that to you on this podcast live to the world.
On the plus side, it's list making. Everybody loves a list. Everybody loves making lists. Come on.
Yeah, I think really the hard part is going to be after you run your numbers, like how bad are you? You know, if I ran my numbers and I found it was like 98 men and 2 women, like that's not really something I would love to publicize.
Well, also you have to figure, I mean, if I went back and I looked at my stats for any year for like race, I would be embarrassed to post those, but I'd probably still post them. They'd be horrible, but I'd probably still do it. Because like we all have blind spots in who we're listening to and who we're getting our culture from. So I don't think I think we should try to get rid of like the shame portion of it. Because even if like, so say you had 98 and two. So if that was your numbers, I mean, I'm going to have the same, like a similar number for race.
Sure.
So we all have the blind spots. And then the point is to see it and recognize that it's there and then fix it and don't beat yourself up, because that's not good. And a lot of people, some people I've talked to get really upset at themselves, right? They get really angry or sad. And I'm just like, don't do it. Just fix it. It's fine.
What you really need to look at is not what happens after somebody publishes their numbers. It's what happens like the next year, you know? I mean, if somebody publishes their numbers and they're 98 and 2 and they don't make any effort to try to do better, I mean, I think that's perhaps where a little shame might be okay.
Yeah, okay. At that point, yes. Then I'm then you are not
I can bring the shame hammer then.
Yeah, then it's fine at that point.
I think everybody's become more aware of it. Publicists, publishers, everybody seems to be more aware of it than they have ever been before. The fact that Ancillary Justice was a big hit because the community got behind it, I think the same is true of getting publishers and publicists and bloggers to be aware of their choices. It's the same thing. It's it's word of mouth, which everybody says that's the magic number to be a successful novel or a successful seller. I think the same thing is true here. If we're going to be successful in changing the things that we're talking about, it's going to have to be through word of mouth, through people in the community like you and Jody and Anna, insisting on people being aware of their own biases.
I agree 100%, because that's pretty much, if it's not a team effort, cause at every single level, nothing's going to change. Like, individual reviewers could do amazing work, right? But if the publisher doesn't send more women out, just without having to be prompted, if the bloggers don't ask, if publishers don't help make it more friendly for women to submit, these problems are going to keep happening. So it's something that every part of the industry has to invest in.
There is the Lady Business mission statement to the blogging, now that they are on their way out from the blogger survey. If you haven't seen this year's blog survey, visit the ladybusiness.dreamwidth.org blog to actually read this year's survey. I assume that on that blog, there will also be links to the previous year's surveys.
Yes, it will be.
All right. Renee has given her you her mission. My mission to you all is to go read that, look at your own blog or your own reading habits, and give us a fair assessment. And you know what? You should tweet at me and Renee and let us know how you're doing, because I would love to hear, and I bet she would too.
Yep.
So it's you're just at Renee, right?
Yeah, that's me.
All right. So tweet at Renee, tweet at JDD Esquire. Let us know how you're doing. And thank you so much for being here tonight, Renee.
Thanks for having me. It's been, at least it didn't take me 6 months to get here like it did you on my podcast.
Zing. This has been Rocket Talk.